From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 154 of Little Brother for the 24th of November, 2024. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. Prompting many to ask, what was the purpose of that? The Russian government has fined Google. Now, it's not weird in any way that they have chosen to issue a fine against Google. These things happen all the time. In this case, the fine is for bans that Google have placed on Russian state-run and pro-Kremlin news channels. The fine amount, however, is what's weird. It is 2 undecillion rubles. 2 undecillion is the number 2 with 36 zeros after it. If you took literally all of the money in the world and added, I think, about 20 more zeros to it, you might have enough to pay this fine. What was the purpose of that? Recently, National Public Data, a data broker based in Coral Springs, Florida, were breached. In August, 3 lawsuits were filed in response to the breach, and the news now is that the company have filed for bankruptcy. They have lost control of their product, which of course reduces its value. They'll undoubtedly owe penalties on top of their legal fees, and now they're bankrupt. And yet, nothing of value was lost. Law enforcement have recently encountered an interesting thing. It seems as though iPhones, under certain circumstances, will reboot themselves. From what 404 Media are reporting, it seems as though some iPhones that have received recent updates to iOS 18 will reboot themselves if they've been out of connectivity with the network for a length of time. This, of course, will result in any unlocked device returning to a locked state. Meanwhile, if law enforcement instead left the device in a state where it's connected, well, then that opens the door to a remote wipe. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Time. We have 3 this round. Plus, there'll be a bonus round at the end of the episode for the fail of the fortnight. First up, we have Albany ENT. According to an article in HIPAA News, the ear, nose, and throat medical practice located in Albany, New York, have agreed to pay a $500,000 penalty to the state of New York and will invest $2.25 million to strengthen its information security after losing control of the information pertaining to over 200,000 patients. There's an additional $500,000 fine waiting for them if they don't get this done within 5 years. I mean, that's great and all, but what are you doing for the folks whose lives got shared? Second, we have Change Healthcare. Now, I reported on this one back in March, shortly after it happened. The news is that Change have finally gotten around to the impacts. Apparently, approximately 100,000 patients were affected, and those patients have now been notified. For what it's worth, my household has received notices on both of those breaches. Our third pwn this episode is Hannaford, a grocery store chain based in Maine with stores up and down the East Coast, including here in New York. According to News 10, the ABC affiliate in Albany, earlier this month, Hannaford suffered a breach that resulted in them shutting down some of their online services. Orders placed on their e-commerce platform were canceled. It seems like they caught it pretty quickly, however, and there was no impact on payment systems at their physical stores. To my new listeners, welcome. Thank you for spending some time listening to what I have to say. My longtime listeners will know that I have, from time to time, referred to your cell phone as the little snitch in your pocket. I'd like to talk about why there is no way to fix that. Now, there are many different reasons why your cell phone is a privacy problem, but today I want to focus on something that's very deep down the stack, all the way to the foundation of it. Without knowing your location, cellular telephones literally can't work. Back in the before times, before cell phones were a thing, there were mobile phones, but they had a problem, which is that the network could only handle a very small number of phone calls at a time in any given area. A single tower, prominently located, would provide service for a large area, but inside of that area, only one phone could use a given channel at a time, and there were only 35 channels. But most phones could only use 10 to 13 of them, depending on which one of three bands it used. That tower would easily cover an area in a 20 to 40 mile radius. Now think about that for a second. 20 to 40 mile radius, and only room for 35 simultaneous phone calls. But it gets worse, because you couldn't use the same channel into adjacent areas. You'd have an interference problem. When you get all of the practical considerations figured in, phones that only use one band, small number of channels, interference from other areas, you might be lucky enough to have room for 6 phone calls in a 20-mile radius. That was a problem, and it was begging for a solution. So, in 1983, a chunk of spectrum was taken out of television broadcasting and used to implement a system where the individual towers only covered maybe a 3-mile radius at most. Automation was introduced to the system, so if you wandered out of the area that one tower covered and into another, your phone would automatically be moved from one tower to the next. These towers, and the areas that they covered, were called cells, and thus mobile phones now came to be known as cellular phones. This solved the problem because only 6 miles down the road there could be somebody else using the same channel you're using here to make a phone call of their own, and that was the start of what we now call 1G. Now here's the thing, and this holds as true for 5G as it did for 1G, and as true for 1G as it does for 5. When your phone is turned on, it sends periodic pings out to the network so that the network knows where you are. Why? Well, because, quite simply, if it doesn't know where you are, it doesn't know what tower to send your calls to, right? Now, with a range of only 3 miles on average, that is not a lot of room for guesswork, especially if you're moving. So, the cellular network tracks your movement. And it's been able to track your movement and the movement of anyone with a cell phone ever since the early 1980s. And it genuinely needs to. Now, I want to say that some of this is a gross oversimplification. The actual range of any given cell can vary with terrain, band, engineering, lots of little details. 5G has wandered into really, really high frequencies with really, really short ranges, and just that alone can get you quite a bit closer to knowing exactly where you are. I could take a half-hour walk through my neighborhood here in Schenectady and pass 3 separate 5G stations on the tops of the telephone poles. That is a source of a good amount of location information for anybody that is actually using them. Okay, now let's add 3 more things. The first of these 3 things is called triangulation. If one cell tower can pick up your signal, there's probably another one nearby that can as well. It's going to be monitoring that signal so that it knows if it's time to take the call from its neighbor so that your call doesn't drop. Thanks to the use of somewhat directional antennas, that tower, as well as one you might be closer to, can get a rough idea of the direction your signal's coming from, and that can narrow your location down to where those estimates overlap. The second of these is called trilateration. For this, the different towers can compare the small delays in the arrival of your signal. Yes, it happens at the speed of light, but still these little delays can be detected, and it can use that to figure out the distance from you to the tower. A little geometry then pins your location down to 1 or 2 possibilities. Getting a measurement from a third tower would reduce that number of possibilities to 1. The third thing is GPS. And this is actually the only one you can control. Your cell phone, like every phone since the middle of the 2G era, has a GPS receiver, and it can be asked to relay your information to an emergency call center, to an app, or to whatever. Thankfully, you can turn this off for all purposes except for calls to 911. Now, I'm old school, so I've been talking about calls this whole time, but I want you to understand, this all applies to everything your phone does. Voice, data, text, or even just waiting for things to happen. It's all the same, and all of this applies to all of it. There really is not much you can do to combat this, except to do without being connected all the time. I've been trying this tactic out for the past week or so. To be perfectly honest, it's actually kind of liberating. I'll talk about what to do about this in the next segment. In the last segment, I talked about a problem. Let's talk about solutions. If you use a cell phone, and I'm pretty sure that most everyone does, there is nothing that you can do that will return you to 100% private. However, you don't have to be the low-hanging fruit. To that end, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF, have published a guide to help you reclaim some privacy. I'll try to remember to include a link about it in the show notes. It contains a number of tactics, but I'm going to talk about the one that specifically addresses the problem that I just described to you in the last segment. We've come to take it for granted that we are constantly connected. I believe that we should reconsider this. The strategy that the EFF describes is, quote, disable real-time tracking with airplane mode, end quote. Put simply, putting your phone into airplane mode or even powering it off has the effect of disconnecting it from the network. After putting it into airplane mode, you can then turn Bluetooth back on and use your phone to listen to podcasts, music, or to play other media that you have downloaded in advance. Your phone likely has a tremendous storage capacity, and really, you ought to put it to good use. Now, obviously, when your phone's in airplane mode, it doesn't get phone calls or texts, and any app that depends on network connectivity is not going to work. If you depend on having this ability, well, there's not much I can do for you there. For my own purposes, if I need to, I can surface, as it were, once in a while, out and about, just to check my messages, and I try to get my friends and family used to the idea that it cannot always be reached. One thing that people do use their phones online for is navigation. As it turns out, the only thing about navigation that needs to be online is the traffic conditions. If you're satisfied to do without those, you can navigate offline. Here's how. For Android users, sometime when you're not in airplane mode or at least connected to Wi-Fi, open Maps. In the upper right-hand corner, click on your avatar. In the menu that brings up, about the fifth item down is Offline Maps. Tap that. On the next screen, at the top, there will be a download symbol, next to which it'll say Select Your Own Map. Tap that. Next, you'll be presented with a map with a rectangle on top of it. Use the rectangle to select what area you want to download. You can also turn your phone sideways if you want the rectangle to be east-west rather than north-south. East-west is more useful for me because it allows me to follow I-90. Finally, tap the download button at the bottom of the screen, and it will start the download, which will run in the background. And that's it. Anywhere inside of that rectangle, your phone can direct you without needing to be online. If you need, you can download additional areas. If you do more than one, I recommend giving the map a sensible name so that you can find it later if you need to update it early. By the way, while you were poking around in those menus, you might have noticed a so-called incognito mode. If you feel tempted to use that, I would ask you to remember that Google Maps is from the same company that got sued last spring for how incognito mode worked in Chrome. Go back to episode 147 if you need a reminder. Now, for iPhone users, again, sometime when you're not in airplane mode, open the Map app. Slide the bottom of the screen upward, as with Android, tap your avatar in the upper right-hand corner. On the menu that pops up, tap Offline Maps. At the top of the next page, tap Download New Map. From here, you can either enter a location to center your map on, or you can tap the link that says Current Location. Once you've done that, you'll see a rectangle on the map, and, just like with Android, you can use this to select the area that you want covered. Click the download link at the bottom, and you've got your offline map. Unlike Android, Apple Maps will give the area a name based on what's inside it. And that's it. Once you've downloaded the maps to your devices, you can use them for navigation, even in airplane mode. The GPS satellites that your device will use to navigate are one way, and your device won't have any way to report its location to anyone. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. Well, well, it looks as if you can't actually have a back door only for the good guys after all. Those are the words of Alex Matthews of civil liberties organization Restore the Fourth. Our communications infrastructure has been, for a long time, subject to a law called CALEA. That's spelled C-A-L-E-A, and it stands for Communications Assistance Law Enforcement Act. It's a lot older than you might think. The law was passed in 1994, in response to the increasingly digital nature of our communications infrastructure. And it requires that communications infrastructure has back doors for law enforcement to perform lawful interceptions. Now, let's be clear here. On the face of it, lawful interceptions of communications, something ordered by a court with a warrant or a subpoena, well, there isn't much of an argument against it, to be honest. In theory, it's been overseen by a judge. Someone had to justify it. As long as the parties involved are not corrupt, it's probably fine. The problem is with them putting in back doors. The argument that I and others have been making since the 1990s when this law was passed is that someday someone was going to break in through the back door. Honestly, if you keep your house key under the welcome mat, you shouldn't be surprised if somebody finds it and lets themselves into your house.
What are you doing in my house?
I want waffle fries.
Well, it's happened. Tech site Gizmodo has characterized this as the worst hack in our nation's history. Threat actors working on behalf of the Chinese government have allegedly penetrated deeply into our nation's communications infrastructure. While the government appears to have acknowledged that this has happened, they have not as yet said anything about how deep it goes. We have been warning for decades that this was going to happen. I don't think I ever expected it to come from a state actor, but in retrospect, I shouldn't have been surprised. And neither, realistically, should anyone else, especially those who advocated for these back doors. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the Helix Foundation for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 Group. Special thanks to Ven, Joe Cadillac, Nitant, Thriller at Play, Asriel, Robert Rushton, and Alex Marthews for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast, or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 155 will drop on December 15th. Stay safe and be well.